Okay, Rabbi Yisai, today I want to review the sugya of the Yichus of Kohanim. I have over here in my possession a very chashuv sefer. Okay, Rabbi Yisai? Let us resume. There's a Talmud Chacham who lives in Eretz Yisrael part of the year. He lives in Los Angeles. There's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. His name is Tzvi Reisman. I think he's a native from Eretz Yisrael. And he's a philanthropist. He's a very wealthy person, very successful person, and he's also a very big Talmud Chacham. He's very humble. He refuses to go by the name Rabbi. He shies away from any kavod. But on the other hand, he knows more than many Rashi Yeshivas. It's not a joke. Both in Halacha and in Machshava. He published with art school. Someone took from his writings some very beautiful svarim on the Yud Beis Chodshei Hashana. Very unique Miktsoya, which I think Rabbi Meir Zlatowitz wrote in an introduction to one of the first volumes of this. There's no one that did this. There's no one that people that did, but no one that did it on such a level. He has at least three or four books about, published by Art School, about the 12 months of the year. Beautiful, beautiful Divrei Machshava. We used the Swarm here a few times. And in addition to the Divrei Machshava, he has many, many articles and many journals, very choshev journals. The main journal that's very well known is called Tuchumen. Tuchumen is a very high level scholarly journal, very well respected. And every publication, every time they put in a new edition, they have already probably over 25, maybe more, of volumes of this journal. Mm. It's not really a journal, it's really a sefer. And he always has an article, a very sophisticated article. Someone took some of the articles, and the article published already two volumes of selected articles that were translated and adapted, elucidated from the Hebrew. In addition, he's a very big expert in fertility issues, in yichus, in right in the career, marital relationships, transplants. He's a very big mumcha in the halachic inyanim, and these issues are very, very sensitive. Obviously, it's not for the consumption of the masses. Okay, give 1 second, everybody. Sign.
Sound effects.
It's sensitive stuff, as you could imagine. And therefore, we have to stop now and welcome Harav, Dr. Colonel Shlomo Cohen, who has returned. Middle of Shebrachos, the Shebrachos are
finished
Shebrachos. We want to welcome you back. We want to wish you a Mazel Tov. Wait, my computer is not working suddenly I'm over here. Uh-oh, I forgot to plug it in. That's why. Okay, we have a problem over here. Let's hope that we'll power up. Okay, we'll have to get back. I don't know if he heard me. I'm not sure he heard my Mazel Tov. Abelazer, can you hear me? Abelazer, can you hear me? Okay. Rabbi Cohn, Rabbi Dr. Cohn, we want to wish you a Mazel Tov. It was a beautiful chasna. I had the schus to be at chasna. It was a beautiful, beautiful chasna. You should have a lot of nachas from Michoel and all of your children. Mazel tov. Okay, so we have over here the sefer. This sefer is a beautiful sefer. For some reason, it's not been published by any notable publishing company. It's blank, literally blank. It has all of the trimmings and the signature of Art School. This looks to me like an art school book in every shape and form, but for some reason art school's name does not appear anywhere in this book. But obviously art school published this privately for him. It is a translation of many of his articles that relate to these very sensitive matters of issues, of fertility issues. And
does that mean they don't endorse it? Is that what you mean?
I don't know. I guess certain things they art schools for the masses, and they want to be keep their hands clean, and some of these things are very touchy.
Are you paid in to print anything?
What?
If someone pays in to print, or is it just a printing
company? I don't know. It doesn't say that art school publishers. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it's not true. It doesn't say anywhere. I'm just guessing. I really have no idea.
They have four different companies. They have a few different companies.
They have two companies.
No, Mosaic.
That's not art school.
What?
Nothing to do with the article. Garnish. Zero. Mosaic is a totally different company. I know because I totally, this Menucha Press, there's none of the article has only one. They have what's it called? Shar Press. Shar Press, and that's all the same. Shar Press and article, but this has nothing on. This is zero, completely zero. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe this has nothing to do with anything. Obviously, you know, these are very sensitive things.
Well, and the New York Times changed the word yesterday. He came out the word fetus. The word was fetus, and they didn't want to have a. And this was prepared a year ago, but they felt it was so controversial, they stopped the process, and they didn't change the word.
Well, it's not a word.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's. I want to discuss one or two chapters over here, which relate to this week's parsha. This week's parsha, we learned about the Kohanim. Emor el ha-koyanim b'nei Aaron l'nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. He presents this entire chapter with a real life question, and let's actually use the question, the real is a real shayla that was presented. Person comes to him, and he tells him the following. I'm just going to summarize to the best of my memory of what it says here, and the shayla is unique. Every single situation in these matters are totally unique. You cannot generalize anything when it comes to these matters. But this particular question, it opens up a discussion, and we can begin to extrapolate from a lot of the rabbinic literature that already has been mentioned, already been elaborated on, all the issues that have already been elaborated on by previous Gedolei Yisrael. What was the shaila here? He came a fellow who's an immigrant from Russia, who recently arrived, immigrated from Russia, who was completely irreligious, knew from literally nothing. His parents raised him in Russia with absolutely zero connection to Yiddishkeit. And his grandparents also, he didn't seem to know much about his grandparents, but it seems the best that he knew that they were not religious at all.
He
knows that he's Jewish. That he knows. They did pass down to him that they're Jewish. At least that he was told they're Jewish. They're told they're Jewish. But they did not practice anything. He didn't know what Shabbos was. He doesn't know from Kashrus, doesn't know from davening. Zero, zero, zero. The only thing Yiddish that he has, a shemitz of Yiddishkeit, is his great-grandfather, not his parents, not his grandparents, his great-grandparents, his great-grandfather is buried in a cemetery, and he knows where the grave is. The grave is in the middle of the cemetery, and on the tombstone, there are two parts. There's a part that's in Hebrew and a part that's in Russian. The part that is in Hebrew, it says the name of his great-grandfather, and at the end it says Ha Kohen. And then underneath it says his name in Russian, and says, I don't know, a couple of words, whatever it says. And when it says his name in Russian, it does not say Ha Kohen. Okay?
And this is paternal, I assume.
Paternal. His father's father's father. His great-grandfather. He knows from nothing. His parents raised him zero. He never saw by his parents anything Yiddish. His grandparents, he doesn't seem like he knew much about them. And they're buried. I don't know. He doesn't mention in the Shiloh where they're about his grandparents.
So how does he know who his
that they in the Sarah. That they know. The great
father. But how does he know that his father married a Jewish?
Oh. Cholo, excellent. That's part of the shiloh. That is a major part of the question that we're going to discuss right now. Major part. So he comes over here. Now, what happened to this fellow? He comes to Eretz Yisrael, and somehow, some miracle, he's choizer b'shuva. How he became a Baal Tshuva, who knows? Anyone who's a Baal Tshuva today is a miracle. It's a miracle. Somehow in Shemaim, there's Ashkocha Pratis. They're watching over him, and he's choizer b'shuva. Before he turns around, he's a shomer Torah mitzvahs. And, you know, he does some research about his family. Again, where he lived in Russia, everything was zero, zero, mamish, zero, zero. No discussion, no one's alive anymore, whatever it is. But he does know where his great-grandfather's kever is, located in Russia. And on the kever It says his name in Hebrew in a Jewish cemetery, and it says HaKohen. So what is his Shaila? His Shaila is, he's now dating. And, you know, he's a Baal Tshuva. And the type of Shidduchim that are presented to him are, not everyone is a woman who a Kohen can marry. Okay, a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Gurusha, a Chalutza, not too common to have a Chalutza, but not a Chalutza, a Giyoris. That, it seems to me, was a very big Shiloh, because there are many candidates to marriage, women who are converts. The halacha is a Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who is a Giyoris if she was Megayer after the age of 3 years old. That's the halacha. V'zehu. That's the halacha. So the or even to marry, let's say, a woman who is known to be a Jewish woman who is known to be a zona, a loose. Okay, has a reputation that she's mafkir herself. There's certain types of sensitive situations that a Kohen is not allowed to marry. Let's just focus for the sake of simplicity on a Gurusha and a Giyoris. Okay, there are more cases, but let's just focus on the basics. So he asked Rabbi Reisman, who had a reputation, obviously being an expert in these matters, this is my story. I'm a person who has been chozer b'shuva. I'm Jewish for sure. I have no doubt about that. And how does he know he's Jewish? I don't know. That's not everything is presented here in the Shiloh. And I have absolutely no knowledge of if I'm a Kohen, Yisrael, or a Levi. But I have something very suspicious. My great-grandfather, on his kevrit, says that he is a Kohen. What is the halacha? Can I marry a Giyoris? Can I marry a Grusha? So this is the topic of this entire chapter. Now, part of this chapter opens up a collection of many other situations. We're going to talk about that right now. We're talking about all these things right now, all these issues. A collection of she'elos that have been presented to Gedolei Yisrael, and none of the cases that presented actually discuss his case. Every single case is slightly different from Igros Moshe, from other Gedolei Yisrael, and the question he presented this basically to every gadol to many Gedolei Yisrael, and they all gave him a slightly different psak halacha what he should do. Okay, so let's go do one thing. What are the issues? First of all, as Mr. Marilla says, if such a person, let's say he would be considered a kohen, what is a nogea? Let's discuss all different shaylos would be nogea. Is he allowed to duchen? Now, what would be the issues of duchening? So it's a double-edged sword. So the Ramei just hit the nail on the head. What's so terrible to duchen? So he gets up and he says, Yivarechecha, Hashem Yishmerecha. What's the tragedy of a non-kohen duchening? Maybe you'll say Kosavaruchu, you'll say that he's over on an Isra'asei. He violates that the only ones that are permitted to bless the Jewish people are only Kohanim. It's not a Loisa'asei. Nowhere in the Torah does it say that if a person was a Yisrael, let's say you have a Yisrael, he gets up on the Duchen, on the Shol Shogol, when Eretz Yisrael, and he Duchens. If there was a Bezdin, would they go and, if they would give him Hasra, would they give him Malkois? No way. There's no Loisa'asei. There's no violation of a loisase for a non-kohen duchening. Is the oiver on a mitzvah sase, the only ones that are permitted to bless are only kohanim, but not a Yisrael? Not so simple, maybe yeah, maybe no, not so simple.
What?
Koy sevaruchu, espinei Yisrael, so shall you bless. So,
ask any make the bracha.
Oh, that's the issue. That's the issue. Exactly, that is the issue. So you'll say, I'm not doing it, l'shem birchas kohanim. I'm giving a bracha, what's so terrible for me? Yeah, many times you go to a chasna, the rabbi who's a non-kohen, he gives a bracha of birchas kohanim. So what's so terrible in the noon davening, the issa say might only be in the Beis HaMikdash. When there's a Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMikdash, there, part of the avoda, you go to a shul, and you duchen, and you go, and let's say there are other kohanim, you're doing it with other kohanim. It's not necessarily so similar as Ovir Nasei. So what's the big Shaila? So Harav Dr. Cohen just and Mayer, they just said that they said the answer. He's over on an Dover Chomur Admoid. Shmoitzi Shem Hashem Levatola. Boruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. This is a terrible Isser. Aseres Hadibres Loisiso Eshem Hashem Elokecho Lashav. If he were duchen without making a bracha, no, maybe not so bad. But with a bracha, this is serious business. So, okay, so I won't duchen. Now here's the problem. If you don't duchen, this was a halacha, if you don't duchen and you are mechuyev to duchen, you are violated, according to, I can't remember all the sources for you this moment, three mitzvahs asay. If you're in shul, and let's say there's no other kohen but you, and so even if you're a little kohen, and you do not get up to duchen, according to many opinions, by not duchening, you are in violation of a triple violation. Three. So that means he would have to, if he lives in Eretz, he would have to walk out every single davening. It's ridiculous.
There's no problem. You have to duchen with other kohanim. The only problem becomes with
bracha.
Only
a bracha. Only okay, right, okay. Okay. Okay, there are many opinions. I don't know the sugya. There are many opinions exactly, but just to paint a very raw portrait of what are the shilas. Mitzad echad, if he does duchen and he's not a kohen, he violates a severe lois aseh, one of the aseres hadibros. Loisisa shem Hashem elokecha lashof. If he does not duchen l'chumra, I don't want to violate that. Every time he is in shul and it comes time to duchen and he does not duchen, he violates a very raw statement. Violates three mitzvos aseh. Kois Varchu, it says three times in the Torah, three different expressions of what he's supposed to do. He does not do this. He's in violation, a triple violation of not fulfilling a mitzvah saseh. So you're really stuck in the middle. You really got a big problem. Okay, now there are other issues. Other issues is, could he marry? Could he marry, like we discussed? A Kohen is not allowed to marry a Grusha. A Kohen is not allowed to marry, like, that is an Isser D'Oraisa. A chalutza is a midrabban. It's not so common. A woman had chalitza, midrabban, he mina marry a chalutza. Another issue, is there an idiom of the ki dashtoi? Do other people have an obligation to give him honor? There are certain honors that a Yisrael has an obligation. L'chol dovar shebikidusha. We have an obligation to give him, let's say, the first aliyah. Let's just make, again, I'm telling you just raw. Don't hold me accountable for the details of each of these halachas. So the second called the ki dashtoi. L'chol dovar shebikidusha goes first. He gets benching. He gets the first aliyah. He, I don't remember all the different laws of halacha. You give him, when it comes to giving out food, dvar mitzvah, and I don't remember all the halachas. There's an inyan ki dashtoi. In shul, do we give him kohen? You know, when they give a kohen the first aliyah on shul, it's not the kohen. It's the mitzvah on the tzibur. The tzibur has an obligation to be chabed and give him the first aliyah. Now this is not nogeh. This is machlekes. Anyway, it's not nogeh. But does he get? Chala bisman hazeh. We anyway don't do this. But it used to be that you would give the kohanim the machlokes, the mechaber and the ramah, if you can give a kohen bisman hazeh chala. You mafresh chala. What do you do with it? What do you do with the chala? If the chala was so, according to some, you can give it to the kohen. I don't know. There's something about chala. It's not nogeh bisman hazeh, because anyway today we don't do this. We give no one. It's tamei. So it goes. It is burnt. It is burnt. We don't give him challah anyway. But what will be nogea zeroya lichayayim v'hakeva meikar hadin? A kohen is supposed to get from every single animal of chulin. Is supposed to get the tongue. He's supposed to give him. Okay, that's an issue of that issue. Okay, another very important issue. Pidyon haben. It's a double question. We have a question number one. Number one, can he give? Can he be the recipient of Pidyon HaBen? Number two, does he have to redeem his own children? He has a child. If he's a Kohen, then this is part of Pidyon HaBen. If he's not a Kohen, he has an obligation. And if he's a Kohen, then people can give him Pidyon HaBen. But if he's not a Kohen, the money that he has in his possession may be a question of Gezel. Okay, there are many more issues which I can't remember, but these are the issues we have to know exactly how to deal with this person. So those issues. Now this, in this particular case, it was a practical question of he wants to get married, and people are suggesting women that either are a woman who's a geyores or a grusha. Is it permissible for him to date these women? So this question was presented to many Gedolei Yisrael. And the vast majority of them, like 95%, said we go Basar Roiv. Roiv people today are Yisraelim. And when you don't know, and you have no reason to assume that you are a Kohen, off the bat, there's a principle called Roiv. Roiv is an extremely powerful rule. When you don't know, most Jews today are Yisraelim, and that's the end. He doesn't know with clarity. His father never told him. His grandfather never told him. There's a grave in Russia that says HaKohen. We're going to get to that. That's the only thing. The only thing that is going for him, that he should be a Kohen. That's not necessarily enough. The vast majority of the people that he asked this to Rav Sternbach.
There was one witness.
Oh, we're getting to that. We'll get to that in a second. Rav Sternbach and Rav David Cohn over here from Gvul Yavis, from Coney Island Avenue. And who else did he ask? A lot of people he asked over here. I think he a lot of time with Chuvis, Rav Wozner. He passed away a long time ago, Rav Wozner. Almost everyone basically responded to him at length that this person in Halacha is not a Kohen, he's a Yisrael, and he can marry anyone that he wants. Oh, what about the grave? The grave? They all basically said, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything just because something is written on a grave. This is what they said. What can I tell you? This is what they said. They said the graves, there are all the time, there are errors on graves. Maisim b'chol yom, there are errors on graves, and it's just not enough. You need something more.
Is he buried in the chelik of
Kohanim? No, he's not. There was another suspicion. Ordinarily, Kohanim are buried on the perimeter. The perimeter of the cemetery so relatives can come. He was buried smack in the middle of the cemetery with other Yisraelim. And there were two parts to his name. It seems, I don't know, maybe I'm making this up, that the people that they wrote their name in Hebrew and then in Russian, when they wrote in Russian, they also added the word Kohen. I'm making that up because they keep on referring to that. Is that in Hebrew?
The story of a guy in Australia who was buried under Kashul Pesach,
right. Kashul Pesach. There was a person, a woman, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, so the person died, the wife was felt very bad. They wanted something religious. She had in her house.
She wasn't Jewish, I don't think.
The wife wasn't Jewish, so she had in her house a Maxwell House Haggadah, something like that. And she told the Matseva, whoever made the tombstone, just put these words on the Matseva to show that it's Jewish. So the person he put on the Matseva upside down the words Kosher LePesach on the Matseva. So. Most Okay, so that's what most of the vast majority of the Gedolei Yisrael that he asked, he said, without anything else, just the fact that it says on his great grandfather's kever, the word HaKohen, and he's buried in the middle of the cemetery, not on the perimeter, where Kohanim are normally buried, and in the Russian portion of the Matseva, it didn't say the word Kohen. It doesn't mean anything. Because for already hundreds, I don't know how many hundreds, but for a significant period of time, the communists were mamish oiker Yiddishkeit me'ikoroi. They were oiker, and the number of survivors who were able to take hold, to maintain their yados, is such a small amount. And the people that are saying, we don't relate to this. Baruch Hashem, live in America. So for us, it's really hard to appreciate this. It's hard for us to appreciate to what degree the communists were oiker Yiddishkeit from Klal Yisrael. This war going on now between the Russians and the Ukrainians, if you realize, study history of what the Russians did to Klal Yisrael and what the Ukrainians did to Klal Yisrael, you'll be scratching your head and basically saying, we wish you both a lot of hatzlacha. I know that's nice to say because this is a different generation, but you understand what I mean. You understand what I mean. There are Jews living there. There are Jews fighting against each other. There are Jews that are part of the Russian army, and there are Jews that are part of the Ukrainians fighting against each other. Okay? This is not our topic now. Okay, let's not talk about this now. It's not our topic. It's not our topic.
That he asked these Sternbach or Wozner individuals?
Yes. Yes.
Is that proper to do? If you got a psak for one.
No, it is proper to do.
Looking for another psak.
No, it depends how you ask the shaila. That's not necessarily inappropriate. First of all, he's very clear that he's just like doing research. The way you have to see how he presents it. No.
He's doing it as a research, but I'm saying if you got a psak from one,
he's
closed.
I don't know if you always say that. I don't know. It's a different topic to what he did. Now there's another very big issue, which makes things a lot worse, and that is that, okay, let's make believe indeed he is a Kohen. Mm-hmm. The great-grandfather, it says, a Kohen. Oh, very interesting. The great-grandfather, it says on his kever that he was a Kohen. You know, he lived in Russia, communist Russia, or even before that, before the communists, even during that era of the great-grandfather, it was shmat. For you to be a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, it was impossible. And how do we know that the great-grandfather did not marry a Grusha? If this person is coming now and says that my family, I never even heard about Yiddishkeit. We know you were Jewish, we don't know anything. How do you know that the great-grandfather, on his kever, that it says that he's a Kohen, maybe he married a Grusha?
Or a Goya.
Which means that the next child will be a cholol. A cholol can marry a grusha. It'll be a cholalim. They're cholalim, and adarabba, they're not allowed to marry a kohanim. They're cholalim.
And then he can't go duchen.
And right, he can't duchen. And even if your great grandfather hakoyit, he married a woman that's not a grusha. Maybe your grandparents, maybe your grandfather married someone that is a cholol, as a chol, as married, he's someone who's not allowed to marry. Maybe your father. You know about your father and your mother. He doesn't present you all the details, but basically we have another very big problem. We have another very big problem that who says you are, even if your great-grandfather was a Kohen, maybe your great-grandfather or your grandfather or your father married a woman who they are not allowed to marry, which makes you into a cholol or a descendant of a cholol, which means you're allowed to marry a grusha. So when we combine the fact that we know nothing, you have absolutely zero evidence that you're a Kohen other than a matseva that says HaKohen in the middle of a cemetery, plus we have a very, very great doubt if you were a Kohen, if these three generations married women who they were permitted to marry because there was absolutely no regard for Jewish law.
So then he might not even be Jewish.
He might. You're right, he might not even be Jewish, but for some reason that's not the Shiloh. For some reason, I don't know why. That's the problem with all these Shilohs. You're not telling me the whole story over here. So that's why all these Shilohs of Tshuvas. That's why all these Shilohs of Tshuvas, you can't pass it these types of Shilohs of Tshuvas from. Because every single case is always different than other factors. So when you combine these factors together, that there may have been a chashash of these people marrying a grusha, plus it's very suspicious, the kever. Mutter basically lechatchila, this is the variation, I can't finish the pages now to go find all the people, I can't remember all these things. Basically the variation, the different piskei halacha from David Cohn, from Rav Wozner, from who did I tell you, from Rav Sternbach, and there were more poiskim, was it ranged between lechatchila, you can marry anyone you want, versus if you have an option, maybe you should take into consideration that you might be a Kohen, and if you have an option, maybe you should not rush to seek bedavka women that are grushois or gerim. Maybe. If you already were married, there's no shiloh, don't get divorced. No one's going to tell you that. No one's going to tell you that. If you were already, you choyze b'shuva, after you have already married a grusha, stay married. No one's going to go tell you to get divorced. Should you lichatchila seek out a grusha to marry? Rav David Cohn says yes. Lichatchila. Lichatchila. Others say, they say it in different ways, not lechatchila, you should hold back just a teeny little bit. If a good shidduch presents itself, a woman who's a geiros, and you feel it's the right thing for you, definitely. But lechatchila, should you seek out specifically a grusha? No, that you should not do. Different variations. There's one notable exception. The notable exception is Harav Hagoin, I don't remember his first name, Rav Amar. What was his first name?
Shlomo
Amar. The chief Rabbi Rishon Litzion, the chief Sephardic rabbi of Eretz Yisrael.
Former chief rabbi.
Is he living? Is he still living? Now he's chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. He paskined, no. If he's already married to a Giyores, Gzunta hates, stay married. But he held that you're not allowed to. Why? He basically said, I have a lot of experience with this. Is what we do the whole day, rabbis. Well, all the other rabbis also do this the whole day.
Yeah.
But he said, in my experience, a matzeva carries a lot of weight.
Yep.
Wow. It carries an enormous amount of weight. He said, in my experience, in my career, see, this comes from experience as a rough. We had many times a question of how to spell the name on a get in a ksuba, which a ksuba is not such a serious matter, but on a get and different issues. And every single time, what it said on the matseva, after we did more research, a larger investigation, the matseva was always accurate. Not to say that it doesn't happen. There are mistakes. Ma'aseh b'chol yom, there are mistakes. But in my experience, we had questions. There was evidence from a matseva, and we did further research. The matseva was always right. And that tells me that a matseva, he has tremendous chish l'halacha, has the din of an eid echad. In Eid Echad.
He added another point.
Yeah.
He says that in Russia, if someone went out of his way to say Kayan,
he doesn't say that over here. He doesn't say that over here.
He said it was dangerous to get involved in it. So they went out of their way and they put in the Hebrew lettering and they put in Kayan, so then the person had a reason for it.
Okay, he's saying something. I don't know.
I think that's what I read.
Like, I have it. I found it.
But I disagree.
Let me finish. Let's finish. Yeah. Rav Amar responded that in his opinion, the inscription on the tombstone carries even more weight than that of a regular witness.
Right.
Now you're opening up some. We need some more background. Let's say this fellow, one person would have come along and said to him, "I testify that you're a Kohen. I know your father, I know the whole mishpacha," whatever he says, "I'm telling you, I'm willing to testify in court that you are a Kohen." That the case closed. Eid Echad, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Why is that so? Normally Eid Echad is an Eid Echad Nemen be soon, I guess. Maybe that's part of it. It says it's close to Ibn Ezer. What?
If somebody says,
that's a special, that's whatever, that's by Aguna. Aguna is a world to itself. Aguna is mamish, a world to itself. It's mamish whole thing by Aguna. But what about Yichus? Yichus Yisrael, it falls in the category of Eid, Echad, Neman, Bi'isurim. It's good enough. If one witness, now that's not so posh, I'm going to get to that in a second. If one witness would come in and would testify, you are a Kohen, you, this person who wants to date a Giyaris, you're a Kohen, that would be enough. Rav Amar was Mechadis, an incredible Chiddush. I mean, this is really a shocking Chiddush. In his opinion, the inscription on a tombstone carries even more weight than that of a regular witness. People take death and burial very seriously and are extremely careful about what they write next to a grave. He writes that in his experience, as the rabbinical judge on a Bet Din, whenever there was a need to ascertain certain information from a tombstone, for example, the spelling of a name to write in a get, the information on the tombstone has always been found to be accurate. This in the absence of any proof that the writing on this person's great-grandfather's tombstone is not correct. Thus, in the absence of any proof that it's not correct, our default assumption must be that it is. Wow. Okay?
Yeah.
It's true 100% because I have to write letters to people, and number one on the list from the Rabbanit HaRashit in Eretz Yisrael to verify that these people are Jewish or whatever their yichus is, they always ask what I tell the people right away. If you have a matzeva from your mother or father, you know, you have to include a picture of the matzeva.
That's what they go by.
That shows that Jewish.
Yeah, but I mean,
okay. This was a quote of Avad Yosef Rav Ad Yosef was the Gadol Hadar. Rav David Cohen is a very big, is from the Gadol Hadar. He is a very smart man. They know about Matzevos very, very well. They deal with this every single day.
Right.
They disagreed.
Right.
They disagreed. They held that just because it says in the Matzeva,
I understand.
Even the Rav Amar, they do this every day. This is what Rabbanim do the whole day. They do this. Yet they had a very different approach to dealing with Matzevos. Now, obviously, you know, we're not, this is a half-baked shayla, not anything presented. So do an investigation, you know, like this, right over here. So we have to go to the, you have to know exactly the time period. Maybe we can track down the Chevra Kadisha. Which chelik is he buried in? Look at the other Matzevos. Was there a hakpod of what they were? There are other tilt,
right.
There are signs.
Do you have a DNA test?
We're going to get that in a second. Before we get a DNA test, before we get to that, let's deal with the Matzevos.
Yeah.
You know, a Matzeva is not a middle of nowhere. A Matzeva is in a chelka.
Yeah.
It's in a chelka. There are many chelkas today. They, you don't care about whatever you want to write. I know when my parents passed away and we made a Matzeva, the Matzeva has to be approved. There's a chelka.
That's in different types of cemetery. There's so many cemeteries out there today.
Okay, so exactly.
And they're burying Kohanim in the middle.
Okay.
And they're...
Yes. So we have to ascertain the situation. What kind of cemetery is it? There are certain...
Russia, middle of nowhere.
What do you mean middle of nowhere? What does that mean, middle of nowhere?
I mean,
let's go see what the situation is. We have to know the situation. Obviously, these Rabbanim, they knew the Shiloh, that he's not telling us all the information. There has to be an investigation. There has to be things that are presented. Sometimes you don't know. You can't go there. You can't go there. It's pressing right now. He wants to get married right now. You know, and it's off limits. The person can't get there right now. There's no way to ascertain these things right now. What do you do right now? What is the halacha? Okay, there's more, but these are just general concepts. There's something called the Matzev. There's a Shulchan Aruch, there's a halacha. An Eid Echad is Neman. There's a halacha. Then we have something called the Matzev. A matzeva is something that people do indeed take very seriously. This situation is unique in that there is nothing else to work with. Now, let me just say a few more things. Now, here comes all the shilas. This halach of Eid Echad and Bisurin, this is discussed by Rav Moshe has tshuvas on this, and he brings all this down over here, Rav Moshe and the Shevet Halevi, Rav Wozner. It's not so simple. This halach of Eid Echad is Neman is only technically correct when a witness testifies directly, you are a Kohen. I know that you are a Kohen because I know the whole family lineage. But more often than not, when you're going to get witnesses to testify about certain facts, they're going to testify that I know that your grandfather, he got Kohen in Shul. I know that your grandfather, it doesn't speak about you. I know your father got Kohen in Shul. Just because you have a witness that testifies about an Eid Echad, that testifies about your father. This is hard to appreciate.
Right.
In halacha, that does not necessarily follow down to you. Just because this is a very complicated kind, this is a big machlokes. If my father was a Kohen, that means I'm a Kohen. That's true. But we don't even know your father is a Kohen. We don't really know that. We have a witness telling us that your father is a Kohen. There's a principle called Eid Echad Neman Beisurin.
But how would you know anyone's a Kohen?
Chazaka, presumption, chazaka. Either there's a Yichus brief, you have actual proof, you have a Yichus brief, I don't know exactly what proof, that you have to have some type of real solid evidence going all the way back to Aaron HaKohen, which almost no one has anymore, almost no one. And, or there's something called Kohane Chazaka.
Is Kohane Miyuchasim
every day? Yeah, Rappaports are a Kohane Miyuchasim.
Miyuchasim, not all Rappaports are Kohane Miyuchasim. You have to have a Yichus brief. Many of these Kohanim lost the Yichus brief. There's something called Kohane Miyuchasim, correct. Then there's something called Kohane Chazaka. How does anyone know today that they're a Kohen? Does anyone today can say with Vadois is a Kohen? So it seems not. There's a very big machlokes. The very big machlokes. The Rambam. He has all the sources. The Marshal and the Rambam. There's a machlokes. A place can tell a person gets today. How is a coin today allowed to make a bracha for duchening? Is he really a coin? You see, come, they make a bracha. Do you know for sure you're a coin? A presumption. There's a presumption. my father always duchy. My father got koyin. My grandfather got koyin. My great grandfather got koyin. My great grandfather got koyin. So we assume if so many generations have passed, and I know already 3 or 4 generations of fact that my grandfather, my great grandfather, maybe my great great grandfather got koyin. So there's a presumption.
There's the old story that the Texas guy was a very rich guy, comes to Rabbi and says, I want to be a kohen. He says, what do you mean you want to be a kohen?
Yeah, yeah.
He says, I'll pay you whatever you want. Says, no, 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 you can't. You're down here. And he goes to, ups the price, up to $1 million, $2 million. Finally, they converted. He said, okay, let him become a kohen. He never comes to shul anymore. What's a big deal? Finally, they ask him, why do you want to be a kohen? He says, my father was a kohen. My grandfather was a kohen.
Okay, now we'll take the money. We'll take the money now. Okay. So there's the shaila. If you have a person that really knows from nothing, and now you find a person comes along and testifies that your father was a kohen, what does that mean exactly? Does that edus establish a fact, mamish a mitzius, or does the edus that your father was a kohen, listen, eidecha nelem b'isurin, you're only one witness. You don't have any real power.
Doesn't that prove that you're Jewish also? How do you know you're Jewish? My mother was Jewish. No mother was Jewish. How do you know?
You're asking a good question. The case here is though there's a presumption. There's a presumption. There's a chazaka. No one ever challenges being Jewish.
And we're not supposed to go back more than how many, 3 generations before.
We're not challenging. That's not the, whatever the reason is, we're not challenging the presumption he's Jewish. We're coming now to define the situation to see a kohen. If a person comes along and testifies, we know from nothing, and a person testifies, I know for a fact your father was a kohen. Is that really in the world of halacha sufficient to let the child also, when we know from nothing, also he's a chozer b'shuvah, he's doing zero. Now he becomes religious. Now we have a shal. Should we give him kohen? Should he duch him? Make a bracha? Shem Hashem. Should we mekayim v'kidashtoi? Should we use him for pidyon haben? Does he need pidyon haben? So someone comes and says, an old timer walks and says, I knew his father. I knew him well. He was my buddy, my friend. I remember hundreds of times he got kohen on Yom Kippur in
that
shul.
Still doesn't prove.
He testifies. He testifies.
Still doesn't prove.
Eid Echad. That testimony, it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Eben Ezer, it says in Eben Ezer that testimony, if the father was alive and he comes and we know from nothing, that testimony would be sufficient to allow the father to get all of the kibbutz. If he comes, the father comes to a place where they know from nothing, and who says you're a kohen, and one witness vouches on his behalf, that would be enough for the father. Does that automatically, is a certificate of authenticity that it automatically extends down to the next generation? Halacha has a strange way, has its own methodology. Just because Eid Echad is not enough, there's no such halacha. Al pi shnayim u'shloisha edim, al pi shnayim u'shloisha edim yokum davar. There are unique situations where we allow testimony to be accepted by one person for certain reasons. In the laws of establishing the yichus of a person to do serious matters of make brachos, to make a shem Hashem, to give the kiddushin, ultimately to give him truma and challah and all these halachas, just because one person comes and testifies that this person's father is a kohen, we know that if he would testify about you, good, you're a kohen. Does that automatically create a chalos for the child? That's not so simple. Maybe this person's child from going on here forward once he practices.
That is Eidus on him. Because if I say your father,
that's not real Eidus.
I'm saying Eidus.
One witness, this is the Lamna Shavart. One witness is not a din of Eidus. Lo yakum Eid Echad Be'ish is no such thing. Eidus, two witnesses, is ironclad. If two witnesses testify that this is gold, this is gold. The witnesses create a mitzias. Two witnesses create a reality in this world. Two witnesses testify that this is gold, this is gold. It becomes gold. That's the world of halacha for you. Oh, but it's not gold? Well, two witnesses told me it is gold. If one witness comes and testifies, who are you? Who cares? You get lost. You're nothing. So there's a special exception when it comes to Isurin. Isurin is to say Hashem's name, Lashav. It comes to give him truma and meiser, comes to duchen, these things, pidyon haben. Oh, eid echad is neman. Eid echad neman bi isurin. But that's not a din of eidos. It's a din of nemanos. Does Ne'emanis come to create a mitzias that you have genes of kahuna? Machloikis apoiskim. It's machloikis. Unfortunately, I don't have the brains to memorize all the opinions and I didn't have enough time to write them down. It's a machloikis apoiskim, how far it goes, eid echon be'isudin to the next generation. And the nafkamina here would be, that would be a very big nafkamina. And here as well, you're getting into the shail over here. This is why some of the, this is what really Rav David Cohn and Rav Sternbach, they discussed this. Even if you're going to say that the tombstone is an eid echad. It's an eid, it's better. Rav Amar says, that's why Rav Amar says that it's better than eid echad. See, Rav Amar's words are very precise. Let's say, you have a tombstone. And they have a tombstone that says HaKohen. There's a lot of, we really don't know what's going on. They weren't religious. It was a very difficult time of Shmad. You know what's really going on? Again, we need more details to ascertain. So very good. Very good. If that person came in front of us, we would let him duchen because someone wrote on his, Eid Echad wrote on his kever that he's a Kohen. But just because that person is a Neman, it's not two witnesses. It's circumstantial evidence. It's not two witnesses. Does that translate down to three generations? And when you want to add to the mix the fact, that maybe one of these generations married a Gerusha, Chalutza, you have another suffix to add, the meal that will permit you. They held Rav Sternbach and Rav David Cohn, and he has some others here also. They were not very impressed with the tombstone. Rav Amar says the tombstone is better than an Eid Echad. Ad kidei kach, it translates down for generations. And we're not going to be concerned. Most people who get married, let's go Bosser Roif. Most people who marry don't marry a Giyaris. Most people who marry do not marry a Gerusha. So we could assume that when the father married, he didn't marry a Gerusha. He didn't marry a Giyaris. We could assume that you never really know. I hear about people, I know them for many, many years, and then someone tells me, did you know that he was married for a couple of weeks? He married like everyone else, and when he was 22 years old, and the marriage didn't work out, and after 2-3 months they got divorced, and then a few months later he remarried. And I know this guy for years, I know his children, I already know his grandchildren, and I never knew that this was a second marriage. It happened, such a thing. That he married another girl just like him, that the marriage didn't work out, and they got divorced very quickly. And they both remarried, don't even know there was a Gerusha. So do you have to assume that? Sometimes children themselves do not know. I know someone's a shocking thing. I know someone first in a very chashuva family. The grandmother passed away, and the grandfather was not so well already, and they sold the house, and the grandfather moved into an assisted living facility. And the children came to clean up the whole house, and they found in the house a mazel tov to their father on getting engaged to a woman that's not their mother. To the girl. What?
I know.
Did she get married?
Just like.
What happened? Married. It was a broken engagement.
Broken. I know.
It wasn't a divorce. It was a broken engagement. And the children, the grandchildren, never ever knew that their parent and grandparent had a broken engagement. They never knew this.
How about if you have a witness that says, his father I know was a Kohen, but I also know the grandfather was a Kohen.
Same thing. It's this. So I don't. He doesn't discuss that case in specific, but it would appear to be the same case. There's a principle called Eid Echad. An Eid Echad in Halacha is a very complicated sugya. When there are two witnesses, people don't believe how powerful they are. Right. Like I told you, if two witnesses say this is gold, but it's paper, no, you have a distorted reality, it's gold. If two witnesses say it's gold, that's the world of halacha. You enter into the shoes of halacha, you're going into a new world.
Right. I want to make your shayla, I want to throw it out with a story behind it. This Russian gets two Russians to come and say Adas.
Yeah.
We heard or we know that your parents were Kahana. But these two Russians, Adas, were not from...
They're not Kashmir.
Huh?
They're not Kashmir.
Right, so they could swear that he was a Kahana, it won't help.
They're not kosher witnesses.
Right. Now, let's say they are kosher witnesses, but they didn't know. They just, you know, we saw the guy get aliyah. There was no, maybe there was no kohanim in the shul, and they always gave the
okay, that's also, that's not a raya. That's not called testimony. That's not called testimony. We're dealing with a case where one witness walks it and says, I knew your father.
There has to be a chazoka in that family that the kohanim. If there's no chazoka in the family, then you can say behind this
margin. Oh, that's a shiloh. If one, a person comes to a new city and he says, I am a kohen. What? How do we know you're a kohen? Who says you're a kohen? The halachas, you don't necessarily say they won't. For some reason, they don't necessarily believe him. And one person walks into the city, the little court, and says, I vouch for him. He's my best friend from youth. I am a kosher person. I testify as a single witness that my best friend, this person, is a Kohen. Case over. That fellow, he gets truma, he gets meiser, he gets chala, he duchins, you can do pinyin aben, he gets aliyah. What do you mean only one person? Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch, Eid Echad, one person is neman to testify that a person is a Kohen, case is closed. That's all that says in Shulchan Aruch. And what about the person's children? This is much more complicated. In some, but now in our case, let's not discuss every single case. In our case, you deal, if you would have a person, the person here knows from zero. He lived in a situation where Rahman al-Islam, the Russians were Oiker Yiddishkeit. And now if someone will come along and say, oh, I knew Yezeda, he was a Kohen, he got Kohen on Yom Kippurim. Good for you. That's good for my grandfather. You are not a halachic edus. You're coming here, mikoyach the din of Eid Echad Neman B'Yisurin. That does not work to establish the person's blood, his DNA. That person who is Neman to be a Kohen is because of Eid Echad, it's not a din of edus. That does not automatically transfer to the next generation, where the next generation is already Achar Hamaisa. It's one thing a person comes to and he says, I'm a Kohen. Okay, you're a Kohen. And then this person gets married as a child. And so they give the child now Leah Kohen also, because once we establish you to be a Kohen, so Mikanu Laba for all generations, when you're in front of us, Eid Echad Neman B'Yisurin will work. But to go say now, 100 years later, oh, I know you're Zayda. He was a Kohen. So now you're also a Kohen.
We know that like you proved to, that if somebody comes and says, and he asks himself for whatever reason, so we say, you can ask yourself, but you can't ask your
right.
children.
Right, exactly. Well, it's part of the same concept.
So it's the same
it's concept part of the
to
concept.
Prove
right.
that it's only working on him okay. and not the
right. It's
generation.
Part, now let's do one more thing. He did, this guy didn't do the DNA. That's the next shaman. They'll do tomorrow. Today there's something called, today you can do a DNA Reason. Test. DNA testing. A couple of years ago, they discovered a gene, and it appears to be very accurate. Right. There's a gene. They say 350,000 people in the world have this gene.
Wow.
And all of them happen to be Kohanim. So, well, there's one problem with that. But 300, anyone that comes from Aaron HaKohen, they took a pool, they did an incredible study, they took Kohanim from all over the world.
It only passes on the male gene.
Only the male gene. And they took Kohanim from all over the world. People who claim they're Kohanim. And they found a very significant number of these people who claim they're Kohanim to have this very specific gene. And through these mathematical formulas, he describes in more detail, Gary mathematician, they came to the conclusion that approximately 350,000 people in the world today are Kohanim.
They have a paternal Kohanim gene, but their mother could be not Jewish.
That's separate.
Cholo! That's the problem, cholo. So just because 350,000 people have this gene, many of these people, some of these people have married a gerusha, which means their child will have the gene, but their child is disqualified to the kahuna. And once they're disqualified, their children are disqualified for all generations. So good for you. You found this gene. This gene only proves that once upon a time you do come from Aaron HaKohen. If even that's correct, okay, you know, you never know with these things, these scientific experiments, because all of a sudden they'll pull a fast one on you and say, oh, we made a mistake. There's more things to it. But even if it is absolutely ironclad that anyone that has this gene is a descendant of Aaron HaKohen, it tells us absolutely zero. If one of these people married a gerusha, or married even a chalutza midrabanan, or married a giyores, or he lived with his wife after she was mezanin knowingly. A man was ma'anes his wife. He's not allowed to live with her anymore. If a man is married to a wife and the woman was raped, he's not allowed to live with her anymore. Kohen is a very big problem. Kohen cannot allow to live with his wife anymore.
Right.
So it doesn't tell us any. And then if he stays with her and she has a child, that's a cholo.
But that goes back to chazak.
Exactly.
Generations.
Okay, so we don't know. So you want to combine. So you're saying very powerful chiddush. You want to say, listen, the gene we have. Do we know if you're a grusha chalutza? We don't have to know about. Gedol Chazaka, you're saying a very powerful svara. There's no question. This is discussed.
So
these are all major questions which you need Gedol Yisrael to paskin on. And there's really no clear. No one is coming out with clear answers. They're all suggestions, and every situation is unique. Lechatchila, what type of shidduch should you look for? He's already married. He already has grandchildren. Okay, forget about it. And then everything is good. These are all very tough questions. What you do in retrospect, Mechadil. Amir, let me just finish up. So the question is, what do you do about the DNA? So they write over here, at this point in time, basically, right, Tzvi Reisman, everyone he spoke to says, science is very good, it's very nice, it's very nice, but none of the Gedolei Yisrael say that it on its own is enough. It's not absolute. Those who are familiar with the science, I don't know nothing about the science, say it's really, really great, but there's more work that needs to be done to authenticate with absolute certainty and clarity that these...
Not even one witness.
It's very interesting. And what he basically says is, and this is what you go to a Pesach for, there's something in Shulchan Aruch called a sniff, as in Kleenex. Sniff. As in Kleenex, is one thing by itself is not enough. But when you combine together multiple factors, then even Gedolei Yisrael today will accept on their shoulders, on their plates, to paskin the halacha. So this particular fellow did not. I'm going to tomorrow believe that we can do another case, which is a much more brings all these issues even in a more complex form. This is an introduction to the sugya. But in this person, the end was he ended up marrying a regular woman. He ended up marrying and he had children. It wasn't no gaya. But let's talk theoretically. What would have been theoretically if he would have taken the DNA test? And he would have the gene.
You don't pass it by the DNA.
Why not? I think Shlomo Zalman said it was before his time. Maybe I don't know. So it's not yet accepted that it should be 100%. But it does carry weight. So what would have been this fellow, Rav Amar said, in my experience. A tombstone carries more weight than a single witness. Now, a single witness is controversial if it carries over to the next generation. That is a machlokes ha'poskim. Rav Amar held a tombstone is better than a single witness. And that's why he said that this fellow should not lechatchila seek out a giyores. Should not. He was machmir. Let's say you would add to the mix, he took a DNA test, and he has the gene. Wow. So now you have two strikes against you, or two strikes for you. You have the gene, and you have the tombstone. Rav Amar, it would seem, you're really pushing it to the degree where it's osur. If you were married to a giyores, who knows? Maybe Rav Amar would say you have to get divorced. Maybe if until now, were you duchening until now? No. So if you're not duchening until now, I would not advise you to change the presumption and get up and duchen with Hashem's name. But if you also tell me that you took the DNA test and you came out positive for that gene, maybe Rav Amar would say, you know, maybe you should start duchening now. Rav David Cohn says, Matseva, in my opinion, zero, 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 zero. Now you have a DNA test, you have one thing going for you. Duchen? No, not enough.
It's not really a
Not enough.
Thing.
Should you look what?
We don't look at it as a definite one.
There's something called the snif lahaloch. Each one of these elements by itself is not enough. But when you start combining things together, there's one witness that tells me that my grandfather was a Kohen. That's not enough. That doesn't translate down to you. That doesn't translate to you. A DNA test doesn't that absolute. And the Matseva, three altogether? What would these Poiskim say? Here, I must leave you this. What would these Poiskim say if this person presents all three? I have a DNA test. I have the gene. I have a witness, a single witness that testifies that my grandfather was a Kohen. And number three, I have a tombstone about my great-grandfather.
They might say it's a lot of nothing.
Oh, I got three.
They might say it's a lot of nothing.
Each one of us.
It's a lot.
A little of everything adds up to a lot of nothing. Or, this is called a sniff lahalacha. I have already three significant elements. It might just very be. You go back and ask all of these paiskim. We got three things going for us now.
You still have nothing on the parents.
Well, maybe we can find something on the parents also.